The book is a compilation of interviews with 15 tribal elders, all in their 70s and 80s. Editor Beth Tornes says it's an effort to preserve firsthand accounts of life on a Wisconsin Indian reservation during a time when Native Americans everywhere in the country were going through some profound changes.
They had been living a traditional lifestyle for centuries before European Americans came along, and through various forms of legislation basically imposed a very different kind of lifestyle on them.
That legislation included the establishment of government boarding schools where children were punished for speaking the Ojibwe language. The book includes archival pictures of Ojibwe students dressed in uniforms lined up outside the school in Lac des Flambeaux that opened in 1895. In one story, 75-year-old Ben Chosa remembers his father telling him about standing against the school wall and being horsewhipped with six other friends for speaking his native tongue. But not all children had to attend the school. Ben's cousin Joe, now 84, was raised by his grandparents and learned to speak Ojibwe fluently.
It bothers me yet to this day why, for what reason they wanted to take the language, or you were forbidden to talk the language, because there are a lot of things that it's a nucleus of our culture, really.
Thanks to Chosa and some of the other elders interviewed in the book, the language has not been lost. It's being taught now in the tribal school. Also preserved in the book are traditional hunting and gathering practices, like gathering wild rice from lakes on the reservation in late summer.
If you push a canoe through the rice beds, when it's ripe, some of it falls naturally into the boat when you bump against the stalks. It falls, and that's when the rice is ripe. And you can take it, if you know what it's like, you can take it in your fingers and squeeze it, try to break it in half. And you can tell once it becomes kind of hard, it's like almost like glass, like a piece of glass that'll crack.
Chosa remembers getting new moccasins every year from his grandmother so he could stomp on the rice to loosen the hulls.
And you'd have to winnow it, get in a place where it's real windy and throw it up in the air, and the wind blows the chaff off.
There are also plenty of hunting and fishing stories in the book. Ben Chosa remembers being taught how to rattle up a deer by shaking an old rack of antlers and thrashing the bushes with them to lure a big buck. And Elder Marie Spruce remembers people coming into town on ponies to trade at the general store her parents ran. She says rice, venison, fish, and maple sugar weren't just staples of the tribal diet. For many during lean years, they were also the basis for the local economy.
Some of them would ask my mom if she could spare some milk, because we always had at least two cows. They'd have a little pail and she'd give it to them, and in exchange they'd maybe give her rice or maple syrup or maple sugar, especially in the spring, you know, when they'd go spearing or put out their nets, and then they'd sort of trade back and forth.
The book includes a detailed historical introduction that traces the Ojibwe tribe's journey from the Atlantic coast to their current homes on reservations in Canada, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Tribal member Leon Valier Jr. wrote the annotated timeline that documents the tribe's long fight to protect its fishing and hunting rights. He uses Ojibwe place names and includes tribal legends about their origins in an effort to put the elders' stories that follow in a distinctly Native context.
There hasn't been a lot of examples when you go to the literatures where Native people have actually been asked their point of view. I think people need to hear our story once in a while.
Valier says he hopes young tribal members will be drawn to the stories of the elders in this book and be inspired not only to preserve the cultural practices they talk about, but also to revive the traditional role of elders as knowledge keepers.
This is a fine example of the knowledge that our elder people carry, and hopefully our younger generation will connect to that, read this, and be encouraged to seek out elders, because there is much more knowledge that the elders carry than that you see presented in the pages of this book.
For non-Indians, the memories of these Lac des Flambeaux tribal elders offer an intimate look at tribal life and an opportunity to reject our stereotypes of Native Americans and replace them with the real thing. Gil Halstead, Wisconsin Public Radio.